When you're analyzing your previous data, you see that there is a tendency for cycles to appear, and that there is a tendency for certain things to happen. Well, well, welcome to Journeys with JP. It's it's a lot later on in time now. It's the August the 20th. No, it's not. It's the 26th of May. I've been freewheeling a little bit the last couple of days because there was such a build up of pressure before the weekend, and it's kind of relaxed a little bit, and there's not so much pressure of deadline and money and all of these things now. So I'm kind of letting the days go by, so to speak. So tonight on Journeys, I have a very, very favorite guest. Lots of people love him, and he hasn't called in yet, but he will any second now. Let me just see. Call in now. Thanks. And tell them to answer. Oh, something's not happening. Right, okay. So, can you give me the telephone? Oh, I know, you type it into thing there. You type in number. I love this. So, Studio B, it's this number, 310. Oops, no, come here. There you are. Wait a minute. Oh, can you do that again? Sorry, Will, I've just put you on hold. Just...
No problem.
Call me back. Okay, so now we're just about to get William. He's just going to be calling in. So while he's doing that, my guest tonight is erstwhile guest many times. We haven't heard from him for quite a while because he's been up to stuff. So let's see what his stuff is going to be up to as he calls in any second now. Come on in. He's gone. He's gone. Where's he gone now? Oh, dear. Life's like that. So I'm just waiting to catch up with him. There we are. That's a group call. Like a proper person. Hey! Greetings, William Stillings, Chrononaut,
JP,
and Dude Extraordinaire. How's things going?
Things are good. They're all right. I'm just going slow today and just taking it easy.
Yeah, that's what I was saying to my audience just a few seconds ago, that today's been a bit, it's like the post stress period. Like things have gotten really tense and then everything's fine. It's like we've gone past the deadline of some kind. So we can all take a nice deep breath. No pressure. So where are we? Can you reveal your location?
No. I'm Midwest.
Somewhere?
In the Midwest.
Just
in the Midwest. I'm basically camping, I would say. Modified a tent, basically, with a little bit of concrete and innovation, a lot more congenial and comfortable.
Exactly. I have a friend. I brought him on the show last week onto Ever Beyond, this is something that we've been talking about for years. Actually, is dust you impregnate somehow canvas with concrete, or you can just pour it on as a sort of light syrup, you can basically take a tent, cover it with this light syrup, and when it sets, you've actually got a concrete building. Virtually what you've been doing.
Yeah, and blow-up mattresses work great, too. You just inflate them, and you have a nice structure that you can put concrete on and lift it up, and you dig a hole big enough, you have a nice roof.
Awesome.
It works great.
Awesome. This is innovative. It's As you're saying, you're probably repurposing stuff that, because now you can take all the tent poles away.
Oh yeah, it's comfortable, very comfortable. Nice temperature. It's definitely not 7 to 1,000 a month, and rent, and it's more viable for my situation than anything. It's traveling for the most part. And, I'm actually going to go watch a plane crash tomorrow about 10 miles from here. A twin engine crashes tomorrow, so I'm going to go watch that.
That sounds exciting. Why are they deliberately crashing? Is there going to be some guy in it, or is he going to jump out?
No, actually, there's a... I don't know if it's male-female or male-male, but there's two occupants, and they crash when the wing hits the ground, and it's a twin engine, and it crashes 5 miles from the local small airport. So that's on the timeline, so to say. We'll cover that later in the
OMG. I just realized what you've been talking about, Mr. Chrononaut. I see. There was a film about this, wasn't there? That there were bunches of people who would go and, like, they'd stay at a hotel. Like, why are they...
Oh, yeah, they witnessed cataclysm.
Yeah. What was that film?
Yeah, that was actually from a meteor impact movie. That starred actually the younger version of the girl that played in Jurassic Park, Ariana Richards, I believe, and... also the actor was a favorite of mine. I can't even think of who it was, but the guy, John Hurt, William Hurt, or one of those.
One of the Hurt boys.
And, they witnessed, people, visiting the past and witnessing, cataclysms for entertainment.
Right. Apparently they can't hear me.
That's weird. You should even say that. I hate you for...
No, they can. They can. It's that they can't hear me on Wolf Spirit. Is Wolf Spirit dead? Okay. Let's see. I don't know if Dave is there.
Dave doesn't
care. He's not listening. Yeah.
Too busy.
Yeah. Okay. We are going out on Studio B, and I can take the stream, but Dave's got it, so I can't. Anyway, so tonight I am on the air with William Stillings. You see, the thing is, it's hard to talk to a timetable about where to start. It's like where, when, and how, and in what dimension.
Yeah, I know. That's always, but when we get going, we do get going. It's been a while.
And was always, it was a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. It still is a pleasure. It's a pleasure now. It's going to be a pleasure. I know it will always be a pleasure. Because, I get you to talk nerdy, and then I get you to break it down and so that you can kind of translate it for us less than nerdy, just kind of guys who look nerdy rather than people who are really, truly... do you prefer nerd or geek?
Either or. Either way.
You hate it.
The physics get explained very congenially for a lot of those who don't really follow that kind of thing. we're going to have fun doing that today, I'm sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's... where do we start? I mean, the people who are not familiar with you, I mean, you can go back in my archives. I've got loads of interviews with William, and we talk about all sorts of stuff. He's got several names:
submarine tunnel systems, Alfred Lamont Weber, sonar killing whales, World Trade Center steel disappearing, and the even numbered elements remaining. Ground vehicles, gravity generators, gravity lenses that I'm actually a specialist in. Anyone out there can contact me if you have a need for gravity lenses. I make them out of silicon bismuth. And with utilizing a massless state introduction of bismuth to silica, which means it's basically invisible, but we get to the physics on that. That'll actually translate in conversation today, I think. I'm actually, you know, what you would see on the tops and bottoms around vehicles are lenses, and that's basically what I make. That's for supplement income. I try to.
Well, I mean, look,
too many people out there that have a need.
Exactly. Yeah. How many people need the gravity lens?
Well,
it's a bit of a specialist shop, isn't it? Yeah. Stilling's gravity lens, a little old shop in the back streets.
When people start getting into the free energy devices and wanting to teleport things or that kind of thing, then they start to have a need for that. You know, they want to build make a platform to go float in the air. Old style gravity generator lenses, I'm the specialist of that.
He's your man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, gravity lensing, right? So people don't even know that gravity is a wave that you can lens. Do you want to nutshell that? I mean, people can look this stuff up nowadays, and it's becoming much more common. But when we first started talking about it, people thought that gravity sucked.
Gravity will lens just like light, but it just does so inversely. So if light spreads out at 45-degree angle, gravity will bend inward. So it just... gravity's a wave, just like light, and the lens is just like light.
So the lenses that you make, are they concave or convex? Are they to
convex.
Focus?
They're rounded.
The convex, so they spread out the wave,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because?
Like a donut, yeah. Basically like a donut, almost like a donut. There's a very basic conducive shape, especially for a three-tier lens. That's very conducive, especially if you're moving something.
And is there polishing involved, or does it have to be kind of cast?
Actually, no. Actually, the reason why we employ the John Hutchison effect is because bismuth has a very low melting point and a very low vaporizing point. So the way to get the bismuth into the silica, which we're not really heating things up in this way of introductions, we're actually putting the bismuth into a higher energy state, and we're making it more massless to where it has less mass. And being that it has less mass means that it would, say, pass through the table or pass through the floor. You would still see it, you know, with the effect that we're doing. But it would just pass the table mysteriously type thing. You know, that's what we're attempting to do is introducing the bismuth into the silica and aligning it to make a proper lens for gravity for gravity.
And this is something that presumably you've done before in a fully equipped industry lab.
Well, minus having the fully equipped lab.
All right, just some industry warehouse in the middle of it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely, you know, it's stuff that, you know, we grab you know, whatever's thrown out or not used and put it together, and you know, it's kind of like the thing in the thing, you know, basically makes a round vehicle out of lockers and alternators and windings and TVs and coils and stuff. So, lockers.
out of bits of, you know, random bits of metal, yeah. So, it's,
yeah.
Where were you? So, if anybody wants a gravity lens, so, I don't imagine you do many of them a year, but I'm interested in this stuff, bismuth, right? It's an element. Is it an expensive element? Is it more expensive than silver, for instance?
No, it's very, very readily available, cheap. It's bismuth is element 83, just a little bit above lead. There's an odd numbered element, an oscillator, and is relatively pretty cheap. You pick it up for about $9 a pound, and it makes great orgon devices, makes great gravity lenses, makes great gravity generators. It's a really, or, you know, as far as an alloy to it, it makes it does really good. Let's see, yeah, four, seven, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, it would be bismuth would be a good power source. It would be good for a round vehicle gravity generator, but it would be very sloppy. The vehicle would have a tendency to bounce all over the place and wouldn't be very stable on the repulsive gravity. But would be actually good for doing one effect to do the stability, but you wouldn't really have access to doing other effects if you made a round vehicle utilizing bismuth. It's good, but it's not great.
All right, so let's just roll back a little bit. You're talking about a round vehicle right now. You're still talking from the standpoint of having seen these things since you were a kid in these black projects and all of these things.
Oh,
round vehicles to everybody else.
Platforms.
Space platforms, gravitationally repellent splatforms. Here's a splatform.
Yeah, fall off it can be. It's similar to unification. Am I getting an echo?
Yeah, you will be until I fade myself out.
Alright. There we go. If you simulate unification, then yeah, I could do a splat form pretty easily. And remember what I said, the second bounce sucks. First bounce, you don't feel anything, and you just bounce up in the air. And when you hit the second time, you're already grounded, so you go pyrophoric. That part sucks.
So because this is an interesting thing, and something that you mentioned a long time ago. That all right. So when we're talking about a round vehicle, we're talking about these vehicles that like the TR-3B. They're not round. But they got a round engine, and it's the roundness of the engine, which is the gravity generator, which is like a microbyte, a tiny version of CERN, isn't it?
Well, they picked that design for a very specific reason, of stability. They got away from being a round vehicle is very conducive to a gravity generator. That's why the center of our galaxy is in the shape of a saucer, because it's a big gravity generator. And they got away from that design to implement some other principles, and that's how they keep it ultra-stable in a repulsive gravity. So that's why it's triangular shaped. If you notice that the TR-3C is 1 kilometer each side, very, very big clue and hint to all those nerds out there, a very specific reason. They utilize a gravity generator, and they utilize an emitter assembly, just like any other round vehicle would. Those are the lights that they see on the bottom of the craft. Those are the emitters. Those emitters are ionizing the nitrogen in the air around the craft there.
And so that creates that
that light.
The characteristic UFO light in the sky thing.
Yeah, the electrons are gathering around the outside part, and they're accelerated in that version, which is they're put into a higher or energized and put in a higher energy state, so the electron shell skips in and they give off a photon.
And photon is the glow that you see. So,
the ionization of the.
But people talk about, they see UFOs and they change color and they stop, sort of flash. And
yeah.
Is that the effect of different.
Different
propulsion directions and things like that?
Yeah, different frequencies are oscillating, so at momentarily you'll see different colors and all sorts of things. It's, that's very normal, very, very typical of a round vehicle.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's people who have been studying UFOs for years, right? And, you've just given away, this is why they are different colors. This is why they can whiz around the sky, because they're not subject to gravity like we are. So there's no momentum, is there?
They're utilizing the physics properly, where they're matching frequency and they're repelling against the utilize gravity. They're producing the gravity, and they're pushing against the gravity that's already there. You know, big hint, which is why the moon would never, you know, like, which is why not other planets don't collide, because actually in physics, two planets like that producing gravity will repel each other. You know,
so it's actually quite a hard thing for massive objects to hit each other, because they tend to be like a frog spawn or something.
If they're over a certain size and produce their own gravity or have their own gravity, then it's very difficult to get them to hit. They can hit, but it's very difficult. This has to be very specific angles and basically speed. under those circumstances, they can collide, and has actually done so, which is how Earth became, actually, long ago. Earth was actually part of the moon that hit, that destroyed another planet that we basically came from. We came from basically another planet, and that planet broke apart. People colonized Earth, or Mars, and Mars broke out in a war 9,500 years ago and became a stone-throwing war, and then upheavals again a little bit back on the 50s, 60s. And people after that war, after Mi Crater was made, it was a 50-mile crater on Mars. That's basically the one that made up everybody get up and leave. And it basically was a kind of a child, destroy each other's landmarks and important sites type of war. When the technology was taken away, basically those left with round vehicles, basically, or whatever, we put a big rock in place and hit the other persons, whatever. And
they had round vehicles, but they were throwing stones with them. You're joking.
Basically, yeah. As kind of childish and hokey and almost not believable type thing, yeah. It's exactly what was going on.
Well.
You wouldn't think it, but that's exactly what that was.
And how long ago was that?
About 9,500 years ago.
Okay, so who was involved in this conflict? Was it a war? Was it a battle?
The society at the time, confliction. If you ever notice Mars is very, very morbid and odd. There's an atmosphere there. One proof is that the fact that they used a parachute, if people need to look at NASA, look at the fact that they used a parachute. Anyone that knows anything about a little bit of physics, NASA states that Mars's atmosphere is 8 millibar, one number out of 1,000, whereas Earth is 1,000 plus millibar. 1,000 millibar equals 1 bar equals 1 Earth atmosphere is the equivalent of 14.7 psi. And, the fact that NASA even used a parachute in 8 millibar, which is a near-perfect vacuum and good enough to literally electrostatically take aluminum to plastic called mylar without having to use cryogenics to cool down the atmosphere to get rid of the humidity that would block electrons. And, the fact that they use a parachute, and NASA says that Mars' atmosphere is 8 millibar ground level. And, as we all know, the atmosphere doesn't get thicker higher up in altitude. So, a parachute the size of the United States wouldn't even do any good, by the definition of what NASA says.
8 millibars, yeah. So, that, yeah. what, well, hmm. There's good questions like why would they say such a thing? Why would they say that there's no atmosphere when there is? Why
would
they do
that? Exactly. Because there is life there, and there's predatory life. And actually, Mars stinks and stuff if you go there.
Which you have.
Answer to that right now. Based on what others say, but there's more into the interview or into the physics and stuff, and we'll get into that later. We love doing
good. Good. We like a good bit of physics and a bit of holographics as well. So. I'm just backtracking because you kind of drifted away to Mars a little bit. But we were talking about 9500.
You do that when you teleport. You kind of blank out,
Yeah, tell us what it's like to teleport a bit. I mean, this is something that, you know, the people, unless they've done it, you wouldn't know these things, would you?
When you teleport any long duration, time indistinguishable from distance, you teleport 10, 18 minutes or whatever, first of all, you're going to get thirsty on the end of the trip because the water is taken out of your body. Return to a time domain. You literally could have a bottle of water, teleport, not open the bottle of water, and when you teleport, a quarter or so of the water will be gone. But first of all, when you teleport a good distance, you definitely get thirsty. When you're in the presence of a gravity generator, which is inherent in all teleporters, you can blank out, just kind of zone out and just, very relaxed, very relaxing. And also very distorting. When you teleport that long a distance, you notice the effects that come into play. If the teleporter is a square or a cube or whatever, it'll become cylindrical when you teleport, and all sound and vibration and light will be blocked out for teleporting. It has to be, otherwise the effect's not there and teleporting doesn't occur. You see the floor all of a sudden kind of vanish. You'd be standing on colors, basically. You can be a little off balance and stuff. But that's basically teleporting. Which is, interesting and very interesting.
Like a psychedelic experience almost, like a mystical experience.
It almost is. I watched the floor become the wall in front of me when we went and just kind of moved up. And, when the room kind of changes shape, and I found out at that point that it was safe to touch the walls after the effect was done, because I kind of started losing my balance and I had to push off the wall with my left hand. And you really couldn't kind of see the wall, it was still there and pushed off. And I found out at that point that it was safe to do so. We never were too sure. When you stood there, you stood away from other people and stood very solid and just experienced what you experienced. No one else can teleport over 1 3/4 seconds, even though light goes 7 times around in 1 second. There's a spongy delay when you're converted into more of a way for teleporting. If it's longer than 1 3/4 seconds, you've either were held in waves or waiting in a receiving teleporter, or you've time traveled. That's more or less the basic physics with that.
And it's It's a very, I remember you saying that it's a calibrating experience. It's like all your emotional stuff seems to get left behind.
Yes.
And when you come back, you're actually improved and changed. How's that work?
Yeah. Well, right when you get back, you're running late for the frickin' water fountain.
Yeah, because you get, like you said before, you get really thirsty. It takes all your water away.
Yeah, you really do. That's not a joke. I mean, I almost cut a piece trip short just because of just a huge need to get some water, and that was when my dorky, slightly dumbass learned to take a water with you when you go. And that's when you find out that the water is actually leaves the bottle before you open it.
That is a very weird thing. It's somehow, so it's almost is this to do with the dissociation? What did you say you said that, like, it's not that the atoms dissociate. What did you say that the bismuth does?
What does the what do?
I'm stuck for words again. It turns basically like a mist and can pass through things.
Oh, the bismuth. And we're getting echo back.
Yeah, you will.
All right. Is this volume good?
The echo is coming from my speakers here. That's why. I've just got you cranked up because you're on a phone and it's very it sounds like a phone. It's not the best audio quality, but
that's right. Hey, Petey.
Yeah, man.
Oh, no echo. All right, no echo. I'm trying to get the echo. Doing the bismuth thing is. Bismuth is a geometrically stable element, which is why it's so great and useful. Antimony element 51 is geometrically stable, and so is Bob Lazar's element 115. If people can look up Bob Lazar Area 51 thing if they don't already know what that is. And there's quite a few other geometrically stable elements in the periodic table. We just don't have 120 elements. We have 300 plus, 300 or 290 plus elements. We just don't have those elements in our galaxy because of the phase of gravity that we're in doesn't allow those transmutations of those elements to occur. So, to create element 147, mass 405, you could actually go three-quarters of the way out of the solar system and run three gravity generators and phase the gravity of one of those gravity generators, and you could transmute to make element 147. One element 179, you would have to leave the galaxy to do that. And there's actually a spot just outside the galaxy to where, just on the outside of the galaxy where you can do that and pretty readily and make that element. You could transmute it.
Is that like a sort of galactic Lagrange point?
Yeah. I don't even think that mainstream science even admits the transmutation yet, does it? It kind of does, I think, finally.
I don't think so, but... This is something that happens on a regular basis in the industry.
No, well, in creating something, sure, but in the phase of gravity that Earth is in, we have access to only 120 or so. It's not a conspiracy of any kind. It's just the natural physics natural facts of the physics. There's quite a few more elements in the periodic table. Element 147 is actually on the front of most of the United States submarine fleet.
Oh yeah, I heard about you told me about this. That there's this nugget right at the end of the sub, right on the nib, on the tip.
yeah, Yeah. You run a gravity generator behind it, and the water doesn't come into contact. That was the older style of doing things.
So this is essentially like when the Israelites brought the Ark of the Covenant across the river, is that the river repelled, the water repelled off the river, didn't it? You hear about that? Gravity generator, Ark of the Covenant?
It's a field. People refer to it as a capacitance or a capacitor. The Ark of the Covenant is like it'd be the equivalent, based on its design, you're using dielectric sand. The reason why the Ark of the Covenant didn't work in other locations because the dielectric quality of the sand was different. So that's why it was said that the Ark of the Covenant was to stay in that one location, and that only those materials of that location, including the sand, was to be used in the construction, making, and operating of that device. So the dielectric quality of the sand was different in other places, so it actually didn't work. But it would be the equivalent of a few farad. It'd be like 7,000, 8,000 watts, that type thing. You build up enough static walking across the sand, which is why the poles had to be gold leafed, for conductivity. And that's why, of course, they were never allowed to touch each other when they were carrying it, otherwise it would be struck down. And, that was,
each of them would carry a charge.
Yeah. And one side negative, one positive. And, as you know, capacitance is a field, so whatever was maybe inside it was utilizing that capacitance. There's some, some basic things in place for all sorts of things. The water repelled off the, water does very dynamic things around an electron. And and even more so, water is great for producing its own gravity. As you know, hydrogen doesn't have an electron, so gravity is inherent in all matter. It just all depends on how you oscillate that gravity in the nucleus towards the electron shell. And since hydrogen doesn't have an electron shell, it borrows one from oxygen. It does great for extending that gravity past the electron shell. It kind of wants to do that, or propensity to do that naturally. So, water, the magic of water, it makes great gravity generators. One of the very, the element, gravity generator utilizing the only, because hydrogen, helium, and iron do and don't fall within quantum states, hydrogen is actually the only element under element 60 that can actually be utilized for a gravity generator. In fact, one is actually in a crop circle that was done, where basically it's a three-sided tubular pyramid. It's a 1-2-6 design, where it has three small balls at the top of the pyramid, or near the top, and then it has, near the middle, it has three copper balls that are twice the size of the first ones at the top, and then at the base they have six times the size as the first one at the top. And you have a little water chamber, and you have a magnetron, which most people out there know a magnetron is what you cook your food in, microwave. And that oscillates the hydrogen, and when you're putting it through element 29, copper, it produces eddy currents, and that produces gravity, and that gives you your Luke Skywalker land speeder, where it floats above the ground. And that's actually a crop circle design on how
awesome.
To do that.
So, wow. Okay.
Just, yeah. You never know what you're going to talk about.
I never knew that one. I really never knew that one. Anyway, so gravity generators how much do you reckon? Given the right knowledge, what's the cheapest gravity generator somebody could build in their backyard? Could somebody do that?
Actually, that one, the one we just described, the three-sided copper tubular pyramid, that's actually the cheapest one. You make that for under $100.
Wow. Wow.
You use a 400, 700 watt, 1,000 watt, you get a one cubic foot would be 1,000 watt microwave. So anyway, yeah, I mean, you stand on that thing, you pile 700-800 pounds on that freaking thing, stand on it,
and it would lift it up.
It lifts you. You'd be lifting. You lift up a good 6 inches. Do it correctly. You lift up a foot.
Right. Well, that's you know. You only needed an inch. You only need an inch. So is this related to the platform that Tesla was noted to be spinning around the desert in? On.
Possibly. I don't know. A person I would ask that would be actually Jason Burdelli. His nerdy ass would know, that's for sure. JP, right. The show where we call people nerdy asses.
Nerdy ass. Hey, listen.
Nerdy ass.
You got a fan. There's a fan in the chat room called Captain.
Oh!
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He says bismuth is used as the nodal lens of the chronovisor, not the teleporter, apparently.
Well, that too. bismuth naturally gives off a gravity, which they term this in science as an alpha emitter. It's actually a geometrical stable element. It gives off a gravity, it gives off a wave.
Excellent.
But that's why they term that as an alpha emitter, but you can basically eat bismuth. I've explained this for over 8 years, is that, you add 32 to antimony element 51, you get bismuth 83, and it has 7 proton energy shells, and you have 2, 6, 12, 8, 22, 32, 1, which totals 83. And you have 7 proton energy shells, so you add 32, you just skip the 1 over 1 more energy shell, 8th energy shell, you have Bob Lazar's element, 9th octave or 9th energy shell, you have element 147.
So
it goes at 179, 211, 243, 275, and blah, blah, blah. And those are the geometrically stable elements.
Right, okay. Because they've got all the shells filled and everything like that. Now,
yeah, element 79, gold's just balanced to, it's kind of a synthetic geometrically stable. It's very stable, but the stability, as most people know.
But,
so, I mean, it just equal.
But the thing about it is that here on Earth, we experience 7 quantum levels. Is that right? 7 of those proton layers.
Yeah, well, there's 7 spiritual layers, yeah.
And
there's 8 different forms of time travel and teleportation.
Is that interesting you say that 7 what? 7 spiritual forms?
Yeah, spiritual levels.
Uh-huh.
Is
that according to physics?
Well, sort of. There's 7 spirit layers that surround the Earth, that surround, not for long, thanks to Fukushima. But there's 7 spirit layers that surround any developed or planet, and that's the spiritual layer. That's what keeps the planet, going or doing. That's the beauty of the planet, and let's break pace here, and let's talk about Alfred Lamont Weber. he's put out an article lately, which was very good. U.S. Navy is killing off the whales with their sonar weapon, and that's kind of true, but it's. The article's a little late now. That was a program that was started not knowing when to do so and then revamped recently. And the Navy, before Fukushima, and other groups were killing off the seals and whales so that die off slowly, and they wouldn't die all at once based on Fukushima. You know, you have a whale here, a whale there wash up, you know, before Fukushima or pre-Fukushima. Doesn't really get noticed, but you have 100 whales wash up like they did last year, then it gets noticed. You know, people asking, why are all the whales dying? Why are all the seals dying? You know, why are these seals with welts and their hair missing, their fur missing, washing up on the same beaches in the same area? You know, you can only guess maybe the global infected Fukushima radiation that's really wiped out the sea, the life of the sea. And but that was primarily why Fukushima was so bad, is that the Navy didn't have time to really to affect much. But but in all fairness to the Navy didn't know exactly why they were developing what they were developing and for what. They're developing for other reasons or for another approach. Is basically how old style principle is basically how to kill the crew of a submarine without damaging the submarine. Old basic 1950s, 60s approach.
This is a really kind of, well, for a start, it's really heavy-handed. It's really unsubtle use of force. And it feels like it's not an accident. It just feels...
Well,
you know, it like at worst it's stupid, but
yeah,
you know, so at best it's stupid. At worst, it's downright maleficent and evil. You know.
Well, one of the very difficult things for me to process, but for one, Fukushima actually was a natural event. It was just a known event, or sort of. Based on future events and things that I would do or say, have to say about Fukushima. We've covered that before on your show. You're JP, you're one of the freakiest shows on the internet. We covered about, Fukushima had a, I got really uptight and very despondent and worried about, you know, I was going through a very difficult, confusing time. And to vent my frustration or some other things, one of the things I did was write about the Fukushima disaster and the four nuclear plants that would blow up in 2011, March. And as you know, I wrote about that 4 years before it happened. And
that's
and
right.
Titled it Japan.
You put it on MySpace. And I don't know if it's still there. Is Will the Edison Man?
As soon as I started talking about it publicly, MySpace got rid of all the blogs. But I YouTubed it for prestige back in 2009, 2010, and stuff. I emailed it to the FBI a couple hundred times, and they got rid of that about half a year ago or so. They got rid of the blog. I put them in the merit value for, March 12th, 2011. And, people say, well, it happened March 11th. Well, technically, hands over the international date line. It was March 12th for them. For me. And, I titled it Japan Earthquake 2011, talked about a huge earthquake and a large tsunami, a large wave coming in and wiping out the buildings and people needing to import housing timber. And gave reference to the nuclear reactors that they had and put in a numeric values would be that would happen on 03122011, and that four nuclear reactors would blow up, and sure shit, on that day, four nuclear reactors blew up, and that's the cataclysm that wipes out a lot of people. Up until about 5 days ago, JP, there was contention that people can still go to the South Pole, as we described ground vehicles and stuff, is that just like the electron, when it went on top of the ground vehicle, it doesn't turn 90 degrees and go to the south part of the ground vehicle. The gravity generator motor of Earth does basically the same thing. Just as proven in science that the air doesn't, the north pole air doesn't interact or intersect with the south pole, only the bioaccumulative rate irradiated fish and life will cross over the equator. But now people by December have to go to the southern hemisphere. They have to go to Australia, or as the phrase goes, eventually we return back to Africa. And being that there's a lot of people talking about how big Africa really is, I think it could handle 700 million people, 300 million Americans, 100 million Japanese, other countries in the northern hemisphere, you get a selection of about 700-800 million people in Africa below the equator, and they will fare a lot better, because Japan is no longer a country. Japan is uninhabitable and wiped out. They will be seeing this by December proper as well. I even think that the most southern part, the most
Hang on a second. Hey, we just wait for the cars. That's not the Bismuth police, is it?
No. They're out of last year.
Meanwhile, back at Fukushima.
Yeah. People got to get to the southern hemisphere, and Japan, even the most southern part of Japan is going to be 1 sievert, and a person's going to last what, 3-4 hours in a 1 sievert environment before dying. And that is the kind of radiation. Reactor 4 went up 5 days ago. 6 days ago, I wrote that it was going to go up the next day, and I even put the time down. It was off by a half hour. Reports come in 5 days ago that Reactor 4, storage cooling pool, had gone pyrophoric and gone up in a big ball of flame, meaning that it's sizzling. And that reactor was a special reactor that had experimental plutonium in it to where they were irradiating for a much better nuclear reactor. And that literally had 700 tons of plutonium in it, and it had 500 tons of uranium, for a total of 12. It was the biggest storage of those pools. Now remember, Fukushima, the reactors had melted. The cores had melted through. Most of them had melted through within the first week of the nuclear accident. And Reactor 3 went sometime down the road. Helen Caldicott, who covers this very well, she was kind of coerced a little bit to focus more on the storage containers, where she knows even by now that the storage containers are meaningless. They've already been dumped in the sea a few times already. They've already purged those tanks out. The storage containers don't mean anything. You remember the helicopter footage where it showed the off the coast of Japan that the ocean was glowing and there was flames shooting out of the water? Remember that a year ago?
I didn't see it, it sounds like it would have, yeah.
It's a YouTube favorite, and I still have the video. It's a helicopter view. They're off about 5 miles from the reactors. But anyways, it shows the ocean glowing, it shows flames shooting out, you know, that the hydrogen and oxygen breaking off from the water and reigniting. And the lady asked, like, I don't understand why the ocean's glowing and it appears to be spitting out flames, you know, like Godzilla, you know, San Francisco does get wiped out. Stay tuned for in 2.5 months, there's going to be an event in Yellowstone, and that's going to be a pretty big thing to where even the upheaval of the ground, wipes out quite a few things, and is a, you know, big earthquake. But so much so that even structures in Arizona list more than half a degree, and some of them actually, even in Arizona, have to be condemned because they lean too much. But that's you know, future readings of JP.
Yeah, well, we ask him how the future's been, because, right. So, how was yesterday? No, how was tomorrow?
Well, it's not looking good today.
Time traveler jokes. Anyway, what I seem to be picking up is that your experiences that you've recalled, because mm-hmm. they probably flash gun you a lot, that the experiences you recall, they're coming together, that you're building up a picture. Let's talk about this picture in the next hour. William Stillings, this is very exciting. Thank you very much. Host. We are I am your host. This is JP. This is Journeys with JP. It's on Monday night. Yes, it's always been on Monday night. Well, since it was not on Tuesday night anymore. But it's on Monday night on Studio B, at the same time as Laurie and Fenter, now kind of A-list presenter. So you're kind of tucked behind. But I think, you know, we still have a pretty good audience. In fact, we've got an audience of some people who really love you. You know, it's like...
yeah.
William Stillings is a demigod.
Wonderful people out there.
William
No. Don't even... Everybody, we have all the good things together unconditionally. And, you know, a lot of great... people like yourself, JP. Thank you so much. I also like to thank Chip Loud Mamba Shirts Weber, who is freaking fantastic. Teresa, Patty, Beverly, and Becky, who's a freak. And
Becky, definitely
probably,
Becky.
Yeah. She's a freak. She's funny. She's fun to talk to. But Teresa and Patty are absolutely incredibly awesome supporters. Very supportive. Excessively supportive. Everyone, thank you for helping me out and getting on the train and getting... I got to eat, which was great. That Shameless had a Burger King McDonald's type food. Did that a few times. That was get the dollar menu. It's freaking fantastic. I had leftover.
Oh, bless your heart. I mean, I have to say that William Stillings is a demigod that runs on almost no matter whatsoever, almost no food and no, you know, maybe a pack of cigarettes every few years and, you know, he runs on a couple of grains of rice in a month, you know. Very cheap if you need one. Everybody should have a William Stillings in their bathroom or maybe, you know, maybe not in the bathroom now.
Well, also they'll have that in their laptops, and I am doing the Over Unity battery line packs that are self-charging. You never have to plug in. Price range will be around $78 to $125, $135 is shipping. These are battery packs that basically they look exactly like the ones you bought with your PC. It's just that when you take it out, they kind of hum and vibrate a little bit, very minimally. But, you know, I'm trying to also configure to do one for an iPad to where you never have to charge it up, and eventually cell phones, I have to go with a different technology, a rod technology. But, you know, you never have to charge up your cell phone. It's not solar.
That's the one. That's the one. So yeah. How does the technology work? Can you talk about it?
Well, yeah, basically, it's an over-unity device, and just to make a long story short, magnets are a storage of energy. As John Searle would say, just not for sticking to the refrigerator. Dad, for that matter, would say. But magnets are a storage of energy and conducive to the to light and sound and the electron, a particular configuration and a particular winding, you know, motor turns generator turns motor, more energy out than in, and I have definitely gotten over 10 watts, so 30 watts is right around the corner. And I know for a fact it's very doable, and especially in the size container of the HP laptop battery. So that kind of standard size. The cool thing about these batteries is even if you took out the over-unity device, you could plug in the battery pack or the computer traditionally like you would with any other computer. And the cool thing is, of course, that they charge up in like under a minute, you know, 1 or 2 minutes, and they're fully charged. And instead of going 1 or 2 hours, they go, 10 to 20 hours. In fact, one of the things will be to show people on a demonstration video that we'll speed it up on. But we'll process a video, play a video game, and play a movie on battery pack power for over 10 hours to show that the battery is self-charging. And that'll be one of the promo features of the battery pack. But you know, just common sense or just the basic sensation. Just imagine never having to plug in your computer, and instead of it weighing like most battery packs do, weigh a pound, this will weigh about 3 to 4 ounces. So it'll be 1/5 or so the weight of the original battery. It'll be lighter. It'll be self-charging, and it'll look prettier. You could put it next to Elton John and his boyfriend, and it would still look good.
So basically, it's, if I'm getting this right, it's not just a battery, that there's, inside it, you've got a motor turning a generator, right?
Basically, yeah.
And does the magnetic field from that interfere with the electronics in the computer or anything else?
No. Not at all. I'm sure, you know, for the magnets, it'll be, you know, have some stainless steel on it for shielding, to, you know, if people are using the traditional hard drives, of course, but that's about all. There isn't any other effect that it's going to produce that's going to interfere with the electron. You know, we were always saying that speaking of the electron, that, you know, they would never get over 4 gigahertz. You know, on the processing power, because the electron does some funky gravimetric effects when it gets up around 4 gigahertz. You know, hence the reason for multiple processors or, you know, quad, dual cores, that type of thing. You know, that's the reason. You know, the electron, you know, is a half spin and does some pretty funky things when it gets up in frequency. So that's why, you know, never exceed 4 gigs on a processor.
So, yeah, that's the, what they call the Brown's Law. Is that Brown's Law?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that.
Somebody's title and name to it, yeah.
So when people get their batteries, is this thing spinning straight away?
That's important.
When do people get their batteries?
That's what I want to. I want to get this done, and I want to get out at least 5 to 7 batteries before the next couple months. And I want people in the field to use them and never have to plug in and give a testimony once a week, or give a testimony in a week and then a month and then a year. And I want, you know, but that's what I want to do. And I want to, focus on doing, iPads and, you know, cell phones. But that's the most important thing. That's why I'm pushing myself to just get the product out and let people experience it and see what can be. And, you know, the rest is easy. You know, making them are very easy. You know, people imagine, how are you doing it? What are you doing? Of course, I got rid of the battery because that's just frustrating. That's great for getting rid of the burners. But, you know, going with the, of course, graphene. Resistant list. Very nice. And, you know, doing the phosphoric acid at 258 degree, blah, blah, blah. And, and these are very green, batteries. You literally can, take out the over-unity device and you can grind up the battery and put it in the flower pot. You can grind up the whole battery pack and add some baking soda and add some clay and you have toothpaste. You know, as long as you pH balance it more with baking soda.
So it's that non-toxic. It's not like mercury in mercury cells or lithium or anything like that.
Yeah, there's no fire. It's going to have a very excellent UL rating, a very safe UL rating. It's going to have eco-friendly label to it. It's just going to be an all-around great universal battery, and the capacitance is just phenomenal. I mean, they really know how to direct the electron, and the cool thing is, of course, you can put the graphene on traditional lithium batteries on the electrodes, and get almost the same effect. To where you basically, you do the iron phosphate, lithium iron phosphate with the graphene, and you can charge up traditional lithium batteries, charge them up in 30 seconds, cram 1,000 amps in the thing.
Holy crap. Say that again. What? So you take a regular battery,
yeah,
a lithium iron battery,
just cook the electrodes, the connectors that connect to the sheet of lithium and the other guts, the chloride and the phosphate, iron phosphate. And it deals with the electron very conducively to where, you know, they all line up and do it very well. And, now becomes a resistant Osmo battery. To where you can charge it up super fast,
and it'll hold its charge and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it feels to me is like it's like Samson pushing the temple walls apart. This kind of a huge strength, because batteries tend to want to come together and join themselves together, and that shorts them out. But if you've got something that is pushing them apart at a great strength, that's what they feel.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It helps the electron do what the electron wants to naturally do. And, and it is a very good, I want to get rid of the lithium tank. I'm all about that, or a lot about that. But, you had on the promo, the radio show commercial. You had some ridiculous stuff that people talk about teleportation and time travel. That's great.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That was good. I'm like laughing. I'm like, And who's going to believe that crap?
Because I'm talking to a real-life Doctor Who on air, live. And see, essentially, you've had this kind of timeline that you've been placed. You know, whatever they did, they placed you in different points in the future, and you have now some timelines, some markers. Have they all worked out, Brett?
I'm not going to answer things that are pretty much fine, but, you know, there's always something to do. I'm not going to answer. I mean, I've experienced, I've gone forward. I've forward in time. People ask, did you go to Japan? Did you see the reactors blow up? And no, I didn't. The only time I've seen the reactors blow up is on YouTube. I forwarded 4 years forward and read about the incident in the paper. The paper was a 2011 paper, and I read about the reactors blowing up in Japan. And this was in relation to what, if the world goes through a really bad time, besides what we're already going through in our personal life. This one, Fukushima is really what does it for a lot of people. Back to the disaster is, on top of reactor 4 and 1,200 tons would be 13 cubic feet, 7 feet high. You envision 13 cubic feet and put it 10 feet, 13 square, and make it 10 feet high, and that is 1,200 tons of uranium and plutonium. That's the volume. Earth cannot handle that volume in one area. They definitely, and Chernobyl would be far, far worse than it was. And think about Fukushima. These ended up in the ocean. And people don't realize in February of 2015, there's going to be a White House press release. And part of that press release is going to, besides on mysterious illness, covered by Abomination Care. Thank goodness. For those that have it. They're going to, under the coverage of global warming, they're going to cover about the little part where the oxygen depletion is occurring due to global warming. And by 2016, the oxygen level will be down to 19.8. And that is because the plankton in the ocean will have been killed off, and that's 60% of our oxygen production of the globe, of the world. Not that we have much of the rainforest to count on, thanks to the housing industry and the medicines. That's what's coming up. That's not the pretty picture. 1,200 tons on top of the other three reactors that core melted, the chlorine went straight into the earth and went down the riverbed into the ocean and ended up 1,000 feet in front of the reactors. Which is why when the camera panned up, you see all the destroyed reactors, and the lady was not quite understanding why the ocean was glowing and on fire. The cores were in front of the reactor where they don't belong, and they were in the ocean, which is phenomenally worse globally. What makes California evacuate? I'll give you a quick guess. I can only imagine. 1,200 tons on top of the 1,800 tons that have already been in the ocean. You can only imagine that it's horrible, and really horrible, like planet killed horrible. How do you get the population down to 500 million? Somebody asked. Doesn't take more than a high school degree to figure that one out. That's really what I wanted to say, and convey that to people that that's why in 2008, 2009, 2010 I was screaming to people, Brett, you sound crazy. That's fine. People can go spend a couple hundred bucks. And I'll still sit here out of consideration to sound crazy. But I was telling them to go purchase a couple hundred pounds of bags of rice, go purchase some coconut oil, some omega-369, flaxseed oil, some compressed kelp, vitamins that typically come out of the ocean, and store it. Get a little nitrogen container, flood the nitrogen the container with nitrogen, and store it. And for the nuclear disaster in Japan in 2011. People say, are you saying the truth? And I'm like, yeah, I'm saying blah, blah, blah. And you know what happened. As soon as that happened, a lot of people basically crapped themselves, and quite a few people tried contacting me. What's going to happen? I don't freaking know. I know that the reactions in Japan is not good. That's what I do know. it's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's sad to see, you would agree, right? It's sad to see the reactor pour and reactor pour go up.
Well, it's something that we've been worried about for 3 years now. The idea of what they used to call the China syndrome, it'll be probably the Peru syndrome, I don't know, but it's the idea that there's so much molten material that it will outheat its way through and drop down, and then drop down into the water table where it'll just boil and explode, sort of thing.
I'm very much hoping that it in the next couple of days, it hasn't done so already, but if it's melting, when it's melting down, that we get at least a half a kiloton or 1 kiloton nuke explosion out of it, 1/30th, maybe 1/14th of that of Hiroshima, and hopefully it'll crap itself apart to where there won't be such a mass there to the fizzle. And it's from the looks of it's fizzling. If that footage was from that, zirconium doesn't burn black. It burns a grayish white, doesn't it? Yeah.
Zirconium. I've never burnt any, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you probably have.
Yeah.
So, where are we going with that? What's the zirconium context?
Well, they coated the rods with it, which is kind of just suicidal. But, the zirconium rods are coated so they stand up to the heat. When you heat them up and then expose it to air, that's when it gets bad. And, as in the reactor, the water's not going to be there if it heats up. So basically, in principle, it's automatically heated up. And since they're already heated anyways, remove the water, that's bad. But, those rods are, it's basically melting through. Japan is going to be seeing 1 sievert, and that's probably going to be at the far end of Japan. Tokyo is going to be destroyed. I think the Godzilla movie was purposely made that it didn't destroy Tokyo, because Tokyo is destroyed and it's going to be uninhabitable. They're going to look at readings. It's not going to be inhabitable for quite a time, hundreds of years. You know, this is a disaster where, you know, they've killed themselves and the planet. You know, I mean, really have.
Well,
that's just a mess.
It is, isn't it? And so, I mean, the thing is, like, how do we not feel powerless about this thing? I mean,
exactly.
We didn't like nuclear power in the first place. We protested against
it
in our youth. We said, nuclear power, no thanks. We wore the badges. Wasn't that enough? Who could... Well,
exactly.
What? I mean, it's like hopeless. There's a hopelessness. Help us out of that, Will.
Yeah. Let's shut down the Pilgrim Plymouth reactor in Massachusetts, you know, so that it doesn't blow up in June of 2015. Shut it down. Decommission it. Decommission the one in Ohio. I posted a picture back in 2000. never mind. Oh, I forget.
So, moving swiftly on, there are things that you've seen in your government paid for time travel experiment that you see that you've been able to not predict because you've seen it happen. Or you've seen the effects of it, or, you know, you saw it reported. Because, obviously, you know, they're not going to just send you into the future with cameras and stuff like that. All you have is, like, what your awareness is, and hopefully the clothes that you walk in. You're going to be very ordinary looking, blend in, do your thing, and then slip back into time before anybody could notice. That sort of thing?
No. Well, you're just setting the premise.
I'm just guessing.
Whatever I've been doing, you know, is doing to do because it's important that, you know, have the preventative to, you know, avert, you know, say, Pilgrim nuclear reactor in Plymouth, Massachusetts going up in, say, June of 2015. And completely wiping out the East Coast to where it's not even considered to be inhabitable, and pissing off Europe and perpetuating the Russia China thing, which it would actually they would just jump on. That would just be a frolic and silliness right there. But phase out the nuclear reactors. Get rid of them. Get rid of that crap. You know, the nuclear reactors are not needed. The whole program of the radiation thing materials like that is redundant now. I mean, it just doesn't apply. You know, the beautiful videos on YouTube, the thorium fluoride reactors are beautiful. They're great. They're manageable. The radiation that is produced, you know, goes away in 100 years. You could stick it 10 feet underground and it'd be completely inert to it. And, you know, stick it in the desert or whatever. It basically just a few nasty isotopes, but definitely within 100 years, it's gone, and it's certainly less material far less material used, and a person with a decent backhoe could facilitate storing it for its service term, pick a nice place and buy a place that's already contaminated, like Pahlump. And, you know, and that place, beautiful, growing, experiences and stuff. Wonderful. Absolutely love, my experiences, but honestly, Area 51, Pahlump is so contaminated with mercury and radiation. It's just not funny. You know, it's no wonder they shut it down. It's been shut down for a while.
Mercury. Is that
is that from
crashed UFOs or crashed round vehicles?
Oh, there's so much. There's if you took 200 to 300 gas station refueling trucks and filled them full of mercury and dumped them in one area, that is that's from lithium six refining and gravity generator making spinning mercury discs and then going to plasma and blah blah blah. But that's just so contaminated. You know, just on the mercury, you don't want to be standing in the wind. You know, that was just one thing you didn't want to do. And it's a freaking mess. That's why you never really see anybody above ground out there in satellite photos or anything.
Everybody walks around. It's like that the place in Star Wars where the domes are the only thing that's visible, and there's this lovely little courtyard. In fact, I'd really like to live in a place like that. These little domed courtyard things.
Oh, I got a dome.
You have. Let's talk a little bit more about your tent.
It did exactly what you pretty much said, was put a thin layer of concrete over it, and then when it hardened, just put a much thicker layer and punched a hole in the top and put in a nice little light and this is just a solar little recharged light, and it's comfortable. It's in the field, it's kind of away from people, humid, but it's nice. And when I finish some things, I have a nice 300 watt AC unit. I know what I'm going to do with that, free energy device. So, I have a free AC and that kind of thing. I'm sick of the bullshit of $7,000 to $1,000 a month. I'm not employed. I dance naked in front of you for $5.
I'd give you $5. You wouldn't have to dance naked in front of me, really. Honestly, please. In fact, I'd give you $5 not to dance naked in front of me. Much as I love you and you're my friend. William Slings, well known for streaking in the Oval Office. Yes.
Oh, that is always the fun thing to do. That is always fun. Anytime you can run through the White House naked and make a secret cervix chase is fantastic.
Hey, we got a call. We got a caller. 310. Hello, who's that?
It's Mark JP. How we doing today?
How you doing, Mark? How are you? We're on the air with Will Stillings.
Oh, Will Stillings. I got a problem, but I'd like to know more about time travel.
All right.
Now, if you can't answer it, I won't get mad or nothing like that, because a lot of us can't get our arms around it, and I'm not going to feel bad. I've been trying to find somebody that can at least put the puzzle together. I'll demonstrate where I want to go with it. I want to go with simplified way of saying that I have my computer in my front room, in my front room, and I got my Wi-Fi hooked up to my speaker. Okay, so I have my Wi-Fi hooked up to my speaker, so I can walk around the house, do my laundry in the garage, and I can listen to you guys. Okay, so my main frame is in the house, but I can walk around and I can still listen to you guys, 100 feet away or whatever. But the interesting thing is that when I get further away from you guys, from the mainframe, it starts to slow down, right? Your guys' speech starts to, come in like really dribbles and drabbles. So then I finish my laundry and I walk back in the house, and all of a sudden, this thing starts clicking now. It starts getting faster and faster. So all that information is like it can't reach where I was, but now I'm coming closer, and it's just more clicking. But what is that? What could it be?
I don't know if they've applied for that, but but at least you're listening to us. That's great.
Actually, it's the that's a, such a magical thing. Mark, you know, this is such a magical feeling that you have, that although I do know exactly why it did that, like to say it was magic and it was time travel. Well, what? All right, here's the boring result, right? You're using a Bluetooth transmitter, and it sends data in packets. It sends the sound in packets of sound, like tiny little MP3 files that it just stacks one after the other, and you don't notice it. So when you walk away, the radio is having more trouble being able to hear the response when it sends you the packet. So as you walk further away, it can send fewer packets. And as you come back, it realizes, oh, I'm getting a good connection. Well, I'll send all the packets because as far as it's concerned, it's just data. It doesn't care that it's music. So it crams all the packets together, and so everything is, and then as all the buffer clears and it comes back to normal, then the sound comes to normal. I'm sorry, this is it's very prosaic, and it took all the magic out of it, but that's the truth.
Oh, man, JP, that's what I've been searching for. You guys, it was that simple for you. Wow.
It's just
that's
buffering.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate you explaining.
You're very welcome. So it's a form of, you could say it's a form of time travel. It happens on Skype as well when you're having a conversation, and it used to happen quite a lot on the Frank Jordan show, and he would be civil, and then eventually it started speaking like this, very fast, and being all the way until it finally came back to a kind of normal rate, and all the buffer had caught up. So I've come across this phenomenon before, and I know what it's about.
Well, JP, I'm so glad for that answer, because I thought I was I thought I was out lost in space there. I thought I got cut off and thank you, JP. So how are you guys doing? You guys were talking a little bit about time travel. Are we able yet to time travel? Have we gotten that smart yet?
Well, I think I nailed it a little bit.
All right, let's just say, Mark, that according to William's recollections, he was time traveling. Can I say, actually, can you tell me exactly when was it?
TT'd forward, time traveled forward for 4 years, and read about the Fukushima disaster, and then, you know, subsequently wrote about it, and wrote about the tidal wave coming in, and the reactors, gave reference to the reactors blowing up, and I put it that they would blow up in the order of 1, 3, 2, 4, kind of a quantum state joke. If you understand gravity generators and quantum state or process of generators, there are some quantum state generators that run 3, 4, 1, 2 or 1, 2, 3, 4. The Dropa stones actually in China. Remember those 728 stones that were pulled out of a cave in China, discovered in 1937? They were said to be about 10,000 years old. Those were actually the remnants of a SEG-style gravity generator, a quantum state 1, 2, 3, 4, 12, 22, 32, 44 type motor. And those were actually an amalgamated mercury-style gravity generator motor, which actually the motor itself looks kind of wavy, which kind of helps with it being conducive for doing a repulsive gravity, so it's more stable in the air naturally. Instead of having 8 roller sections per roller, it has actually 16. And, it's a very good, and a 10,000-plus-year-old gravity generator motor design is very, very innovative.
So a gravity generator, Mark, is the basis of time travel and teleportation and all of these things, because when you're turned to a wave by gravity, you can move vast distances really quickly. Am I correct, Brett?
Yeah.
That would be your physical body? Is that what your meaning is? Or would it be your mind?
Well, gravity and generators are inherent in all teleporters and time travel technology, and they have to be by law. You have to have a propagating gravity wave for an instance or a reference of time, and you have to present three instances or references or stances of time in order to do time travel or teleportation. That's just a must. One of those references would be the propagating of a gravity wave, which propagates nearly instantly. Whether the person's running through the teleporter, time is indistinguishable from distance. That's another reference of time. And, the traversing of distance. Gravity generators are basically the next step up for facilitate people in impossible needs. It's not to be elsewhere. Not to just completely maul the Fukushima issue into the ground, but people got to get out of the United States now. And they have to go to the Southern Hemisphere now. That's why.
Because you're saying the radiation.
Ask any physicist. You go up to them, don't mention Fukushima, and say, "Hey, would 1,200 tons of plutonium uranium in one area be bad, and what would it do to that area if not globally?" And they'll tell you. And you put that 1,200 tons on top of 1,800 tons, and it's a mess. And they'll tell you. And as soon as you mention Fukushima, they'll go into it might not be that bad, blah blah blah, and you'll get a totally different story. It's beyond that. It's the planet wrecker. It's why I wrote about it preemptively. It is that bad.
Mm-hmm.
That is why. That's why I spewed and screamed and. I sound like a nutball. Fantastic. Be sure to buy about a couple hundred pounds of rice and get coconut.
I'm having a little trouble. You say we should be 1,000 miles away from the coast or from, I'm not sure you understand.
For starters, people should be, of course, and this goes to the whole FEMA thing, but people should start compiling towards the middle of the United States. Guess where? That's the Colorado region of the NWO. And consider getting to Australia. The radiation is not going to be nearly anything bad in Australia. But get there. It's bad. People are dying before December. 30 million Japanese dead before December. That's got to say to most people that's bad. Look at it politically and realistically. Japan didn't evacuate, and they were kind of restrained from evacuating. You think they're going to be allowed to evacuate now? No. So really, that's really going to be, the figures of 80 to 100 million dead Japanese.
In L.A., I know it's down here in California, there's a lot of Japanese Orientals. I mean, it's quantum. I mean, you'd see one, but now I see four times as many. I don't know where JP's at. I don't know if he notices the influx of Asians coming. I mean, it's very noticeable. It's very noticeable. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, well, they're going to have to leave there, too. compiles in the middle of the United States, it's all, you know, if someone said it's all going to make sense later, guess what? Fukushima really wrecked it for a lot of things.
I won't eat no tuna. There's some tuna running right now. There's some good stuff going, you know, some fishing off coast. You know, I took my wife and I said, no, I go, I'm going to hang out with you guys. I don't want to go out on that ocean, you know. And, you know, oh, big deal, I got a tuna. Oh, yeah.
You can take a radiation detector. First of all, people, one of the needed materials you need to get right now is, before they jack the price up more, is go on to eBay and purchase a Soiks, S-E-O-K-S, radiation beta gamma detector. They're about $140, so probably around $200 now. The purchase, it looks kind of like an iPod, but it's just a little thicker. Purchase that and use that to check your food. That's going to be about as commonplace now as a fucking hair dryer. And people are going to have to get away from the convenience of the iPhone and everything and go back to basic survival skills. And we're going to have this, and as much as you're going to have hydrogen peroxide, pure silver, for making colloidal silver,
right.
Bags of rice and coconut oil and flaxseed oil and all those things I said to get before 2011 and tried to impress on people before 2011. I said, you know, if you're like with a blonde chick, before you put on the condom, run out and go purchase a couple hundred pounds of bags of rice and coconut oil. It was that important. And, you know, but the radiation detector is the one thing that people need to get, and they're going to jack up the price. So get on eBay and purchase your radiation detector, Soiks, S-E-O-K-S. Very important. You go out in the ocean, you go out to the water and check for radiation, you basically come up with nothing. As soon as you walk away from the water, walk up on the shore, go to Huntington Beach, go to Santa Monica, go to any beach in California, and watch that thing go to 50 becquerels, and then go to 100 and listen to the alarm go off, and then you know there's an issue. And it's no wonder that Japan, after the incident, they raised the international tolerance from 10 becquerels a year allowable to up to 100, and America has followed suit just 8 months ago, and people can look that up. That's what's disturbing. So now apparently 100 becquerel is tolerable, which 1 becquerel is 37 billion, with a B, billion disintegrations a second. So,
Wow. Yeah. I'm really, it's phenomenal that they let these, well, I don't know who did it, and, you know, so when I see these Orientals, I don't know if my government was the one, the cause of it. It's just so sad that, this thing happened, and now we can't. We're just paralyzed. We're crippled. We can't do nothing.
No. In fact, that's how it's going to be, because basically the government really isn't doing some of those things. Fukushima was a natural event, was a natural disaster, which is why it was such a natural concern, and a particular concern.
Right. Right, and, we gotta get past the blame game, like blaming this person, that person. You just gotta say, okay, do the right thing, protect your family, and make sure that, I don't know how much longer we can, you know, a couple years before we all are gonna be in the hospital, and, you know.
I don't think you'll have to wait a couple years, I think maybe a year. Before reactor 4, and I posted this, people were going to look at illness from 3 to 7 years, 5 to 10 years. With this, you're going to see people on the West Coast that are going to start having mysterious illnesses before the end of the year, before December. You're going to see people with illnesses before the end of the year. So you won't have to wait long.
I'm listening. I'm riding along your same wavelength there. I'm hearing you. I hear you loud and clear, William.
Yeah. It's a mess. It's a real mess. And you know, the you know, don't blame the engineers over in Japan. They were extremely apologetic, and they're very sorry. I screamed on the phone in 2010. I spent $30 in international calls. I called them, found the cheapest calling plan I could, and I called the three reactors on the northeast side of Japan in 2010. And, you know, tried to say very gently, like, listen, if you guys have an earthquake in March of 2011, shut down, we have some technology over here, blah, 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 and we've looked ahead, and there's a major event that comes up, and, you know, I tried to find somebody that spoke good enough English, and, of course, as soon as you get to the time travel part, they hang up.
Okay, now, was that you that had that time travel vision? Is that you were the one that had it to warn the Japanese and they didn't listen? Is that, do I understand you right?
Yeah, well, let's just chalk it up as a nice socially explained psychic moment.
Okay, understood.
I think that's all right.
Understood, yeah. Well, you know what? Nobody's going to, no governmental agency, they just... They're falling all over themselves. They can't even pick up a penny.
The government's doing fine. The American people, or some of the country, and a lot of people outside the country are falling over themselves. And I try to explain to the agency. I'm like, listen, if Fukushima happens, it's going to change the dynamics of the motor generator. HARP isn't going to be able to do some of the things that it's able to do. It's not going to, the motor is going to be different. It's going to function differently. One thing radiation does do is interfere with gravity generators. That's why round vehicles don't like this, because it betrays the effect of round vehicles. Guess what? Remember I told you all that there was going to be a problem? Round vehicles now can't get close enough to clean up. Round vehicles have to be very visible, cancel out their effect, and do some other effects, and clean up radiation. Hopefully that's what we still can do. But that's what happens. Radiation messes with gravity generators, and it has a tendency to simulate unifications of that monopole device and cancel out the effect, and round vehicles have a tendency, while in effect or in transition of effect, of dropping out of the sky.
Hey, I just had a thought. Hey, Brett, remember you were telling me about the round vehicles that were above the World Trade Center on 9/11, and the beam that teleported the iron out of the Twin Towers. Could that not be used to teleport the molten stuff out of the thingy?
Yes, I said that posted that a few times and was planning to bring that up. But, imagine that when World Trade Center, the electromagnetic wave tied to a time domain, the scalar device was used, which the scalar device weapon is actually out in the Philippines. It goes 80 kilometers down into the earth. And those two very long wave devices, I posted the location on Google Earth back in 2010, 2011. 2012 and so on. When World Trade Center, when the 700 feet of World Trade Center steel disappeared, people noticed that what they noticed was the cloud, or part of the cloud. You know, the cloud didn't total up the sum of the volume of the World Trade Center steel. The iron in that steel got returned back to a time domain, an energy to mass event. And what people saw, the cloud that people saw from that steel, was actually the even-numbered elements. They saw the nickel element 28. They saw the chromium element 24. They saw the carbon element 6. You know what makes up steel and stainless steel. 7% nickel. You know, they saw half a percent of carbon, and saw 1.5% of chromium. And, the very same thing could be done with the scalar device, but the government won't do it. And actually, under fizzle effect, I don't know if it could be. There's some dynamic effects that occur with a higher energy state. But the crossover section, the crossover section, they can find the core and the fizzle material. which it shouldn't be too hard for them to do. They could, you can spot a speck of gold and 100 tons of lead based on the frequency of that each isotope has its own specific frequency. Mm-hmm. And do a crossover section, and they can get, you know, they get the uranium. It's an oscillator, though. Let's see, 92 and 94, the rotors, the isotope under effect, blah, 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 59, 54, 73, 240, blah, 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 blah. They could, the rotors would return, the rotors would return, partially would return back to a time domain. So what they could do is, you know, do the crossover section, you know, on that, and just get rid of the molten core.
So it's possible. Look, Will, we've got 1 minute left, maybe 10 seconds, who knows. William Stillings, is there any way people can... Yeah, there's the William Stillings Fan Club on Facebook. You can see that in the chat room, but it's, yeah, basically Facebook. There we go.
Your listeners can send me $1 at williamstillings@gmail.com.
That's right. If everybody sent him $1, he'd be almost a poor man.
How do you spell the last name?
Good night, everybody, and thank you very much for calling.